I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about technology and how it's changing, what it's going to mean for each of us. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. On this fresh edition of the Faith Middleton Show, we get at On Ice, Ideas, Creativity, Edge, and analyst Rich Hanley of Quinnipiac University and I are going to cruise through the future of technology. And we hear things all the time, as you must. For instance, you might have heard this, and we've had futurists on the show saying this. In the very near future, like within a couple of years, we are going to be the generators of all content online. And I think, wow, what a thing. And then I go home and I say to myself, what do they mean? What in the world does that mean? How are we going to be the generators of all content? How are we going to be channels? How are people going to find us? How does that work? So I said to Rich, it is time for you to take the lead on Ice, because this is what he does at Quinnipiac. He is a new media guy. He's also a filmmaker. He does television shows. He knows technology like crazy. So, Rich, welcome back.
Thanks, Faith.
Let's start with the shift in consumption that we're all going through. No matter what your age, just assuming that you have a little bit of media savvy.
Right. We're going through a Cambrian explosion of different media forms and different distribution platforms that are disconnecting us from our traditional past, appointment viewing television, and so on and so forth. It's all really much an on-demand world. In a sense,
meaning appointment viewing television, we're recording on our cable all the shows we want. We're making our own channels, favorite shows.
We're becoming our own producers in the sense that we used to just wait for 8 o'clock and here's the show and there it was and then you talk about it the next day. Now with companies such as Netflix, Amazon Video, and others, and HBO, of course, has been a leader in this. We can program our own day and watch when we want to watch. And with Netflix, we can binge watch an entire season in one sitting, which is something that a lot of people like to do now. But that actually references an older form of media consumption in the 19th century, when it used to be serials. Magazines would come out in serial with stories in serial form, and you'd wait. And then
Charles Dickens in the daily newspaper.
Right.
He had a serial going his books.
And then the book came out, and you binged read his serial through a book. And that's what's happening pretty much with television now with Netflix.
Okay, so that's television. Let's move into how consumption is changing on the internet itself.
Right. Yeah. There are people who don't even know the internet exists because it's all they know. And they see Facebook as the internet. And so you have media companies like the New York Times and others who are saying, how can we be part of this ecosystem?
All right. Let's back up for a second because I don't want that to go by. This is such a crucial point. Facebook almost – it's been around for such a while now that it almost feels traditional, not the most cutting edge. And yet Facebook, you're saying, is the internet. People don't think about anything else. It's all Facebook.
Right. It's like what the idea of websites and Google searches seems to have taken a back seat to people going onto social media, most importantly Facebook, and seeing that as their interface with digital content. It's just because of its massive population and the capacity to put video there and make some money there. Facebook is making some very, very good money. And so media companies like the New York Times are seeking to find a way to capitalize on Facebook as a platform, not on the internet as a platform.
Yeah, this was so interesting. I read that story too this week, Rich, where they're talking Facebook is trying to make that deal with the New York Times. And this is a very important moment because we'll get into what that would mean for a giant, world organization like the New York Times. If they did something like this, and for many others, Facebook is also talking to other content providers about joining them. And, can they pull this off? Because if that starts to move in their direction, wow, anything could happen. I bet
Absolutely.
A lot of conversations started the minute this story broke.
Oh, everyone's talking about it.
So what does it mean if the New York Times says, yep, we're going with Facebook, we're going to put our content, the way to find us is going to be Facebook. If they say yes to that, what will that mean for their own site online?
Well, it basically neutralizes their site because, I mean, as it is now, New York Times social media team puts a link to an article on Facebook. A person clicks on that link. They go to the New York Times website. Instead of going to the Times website under this emerging model, the audience will stay within the Facebook ecosystem.
And
the story
Facebook,
will be New York Times on Facebook.
Yeah. Search New York Times on Facebook.
Yeah, and that will be their portal to all information produced by the New York Times.
And that will be both videos and stories and headlines and what you need to know business.
Opinions, everything.
Everything. Yeah. So now, how would the New York Times make money on Facebook?
That's always the critical question, and it's got to be a money-sharing deal with Facebook. Facebook can't say, oh, we'll just host your stuff. The money has to go to the New York Times, and the New York Times won't take part in
this. Do you think
a
percentage deal will go to Facebook? Or
yeah, they'll take something. They'll take something. But the New York Times needs to take the most.
But I was going to say the early people who jump in here are going to probably get the best deals, it would seem to me, because for Facebook to pull this off, if they could land the New York Times, even HBO, even, you know, we could go through a list of major players. And if they could land major newspapers in the world, major magazines, radio, and make fabulous deals for those major players in the beginning and maybe play a little rougher with people later on because they don't need them quite so much, but steal the most powerful and the biggest audiences through great deals. What a thing this would be. That'd be a revolution.
Well, yeah. I mean, it changes and upsets the distribution model of websites right now, and it will change the economic equation, certainly. But Facebook understands that good content costs good money to produce, so they're not going to try to squeeze the content providers. They know that to do good journalism requires a considerable investment in resources and skilled people. So any deal that emerges from this will make sure that the content retains the quality of, say, the New York Times or the Guardian or any of the other publications or traditional media that need to get on this.
Let me get to you about age on this. I don't know if you know these numbers, but when you say for so many people, Facebook is the entire internet, they don't need to go anywhere else, except if you're looking for a certain pair of sneakers. So let's say that's true. What age group are you talking about? Is this true across the age spectrum? Is Facebook the internet for everybody, regardless of age?
Yeah, it is. And for many people, in many ways, it's like the old AOL model. When AOL had its heyday in the 1990s, people, the audience, saw AOL as the internet and interpreted the internet through the AOL portal to get to content and whatnot. Then it became the Googleverse. People interpreted the internet as what Google led them to the internet. And that's, you know, truly websites and so on and so forth.
So as Google is reading this this week in the New York Times, and they see the New York Times is in conversation with Facebook, Google's such a big player. I don't for a minute think, as some stories have led us to believe recently, that Google's suddenly becoming out of it and old-fashioned. For a second, they are so powerful. What's Google going to do?
Well, Google's going big in video and trying to transform its YouTube property into a music distribution and video distribution system using a monetary policy or monetization policy that rewards artists to a point for creating original content, yet keeps the advertising money flowing into Google because
they just want to be entertainment zone.
News, entertainment, and what? But they see themselves as a search engine, which the vast majority of the revenue comes from keyword searches and whatnot.
Yeah.
But they're looking at YouTube, you know, pre-roll video and all that other stuff, the ads that show up before you watch your video as the key to their future. They see YouTube as the video channel of the future, accessed, you know, obviously through their interface.
But those YouTube videos are pretty short.
Yeah.
I mean, the most watched ones are pretty short. So where are people going to be watching long form stuff? The half hour show, the 60-minute show, the 2-hour movie.
Well, Google will have relationships with studios and use that relationship to port, because you can get long form content through YouTube.
Yeah,
the shorter stuff, generally user generated stuff, but it's not just filmed entertainment. It's most importantly music.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think Google is going to major in music and that Facebook is going to major in all the stuff we're talking about, the major information scene? Or would you guess that Google is going to make a play and be a competitor in a major way with Facebook?
No, they can't. They tried and they can't. Google tried a social media, a platform. You know, it's been sluggish at best. Google Plus just doesn't. It never gained traction among enough people where you talk about, I saw something on on
Google
this,
and it wasn't explained well. It didn't have. It wasn't a thing.
No, and I saw a funny joke about it. They said, "Well, Google should just sell it for parts because it just didn't. It just didn't work."
I wonder if they could reinvent that, do it in a better way.
I'm sure Google can do whatever it wants. It certainly has the capital resources to innovate and invent, and most importantly, the capital resources to fail.
Okay.
But I don't know if we're going to see that.
So let's get to this thing that we've just had a futurist on the show. We've had others say this, and it's a riveting comment that in the very near future, like within a few years, we are going to totally be the content providers, all of us, you listening right now, all your friends and neighbors listening right now, so thousands and thousands and thousands of you, plus Rich, Lori, everybody, we're all going to be the content providers.
Right.
What are they talking about?
Well, we are our data, and we will share our data, and our data will be our stories.
What does that mean?
By that, I mean the stuff we generate in our day-to-day lives as measured and monitored through our smartphones. In the sense that I could post where I traveled, what I bought,
But don't you think we know people are doing that now, right?
Yeah, right. Through their own, production of videos, Instagram, images, and so on and so forth. We basically are in that business right now.
So through our phones, this is all going to be phone-based.
Yeah, it's a mobile world now. Yeah.
Absolutely. So everything's is going to be on the smartphone, and who knows what that's going to become. But let's say as we know it right now.
Right.
Everything on the smartphone.
Right.
So what is it we know now people are using Facebook to say, I took five breaths at 4:07 this afternoon. Okay. So, but beyond that, what is it beyond Facebook type stuff?
What's happening already through social media, Facebook, Twitter, and so on. I mean, we're grieving through these social media instruments, when somebody passes, we let the world know about the passing, and then people share condolences through comments and tweets and retweets and whatnot. We share birth events, and it's really the story of our life that's being presented to the world through these, and people then react to it, and it's become this glorious medley, as Dorothy Parker would write, of extemporanea out there, major life events, good things, bad things. And our data is running in the background, showing people where we are at a given time. And also, we can throw our own, our history, our exercise history out there. So our data is what we generate and what we decide to share.
So that makes a very intimate and personal world. That sounds very interesting to me in that way, because there were only, there are only so many, quote-unquote, independent filmmakers or independent singers or, independent bookstores. Yeah. This is going to make that huge. And my question is, though, does this go only to your friends and your friends' friends, or does this go – this is the answer on the other side of this break. Or does this go to many more people as these futurists are describing in the next few years? That's my question for Rich Hanley here on this fresh edition of On Ice, and we'll be right back. If you want to stay in tune with what's happening, don't go away. I I'm Faith Middleton with Rich Hanley, who is our chief analyst here on Ice, Ideas, Creativity, Edge. This is a fresh edition of that show, and I asked Rich Hanley, who's a media specialist, to give us some lessons, clue us in on what's happening in technology and how this affects every single one of us and what's going to happen next. Where is this all going? Because this is what Rich does. He sits around and studies this. He is part of the faculty at Quinnipiac teaching students about how this is going to go and learning from them, too, because their feet are on the ground. And so Rich, here you were just describing people who are doing this content themselves, all of us, grieving about someone at a funeral, saying, I just enjoyed such and such at this restaurant. I'm having this experience in this place right now. It's so phenomenal. I just heard this lecture. This person giving a commencement address at this university just said the following thing, and it has really affected me. Amazing, very personal content. Who's going to see this? Just that person's friends and those friends' friends? Or is, how many people is this going to affect?
If it's popular enough, it'll affect everyone around the world. I mean, it's going to be basically it's a total democracy when it comes to content now, in that the consumers vote through retweeting stuff and sharing stuff whether or not it's going to be viewed by massive amounts of people. And so you take the piccolo player from Villanova at the NCAA basketball game over the weekend. You know, there's the video of television, traditional coverage of her, crying because Villanova lost and playing the piccolo. Okay, that piece of video, which is professionally created and through a rights situation, with NCAA and CBS, that little piece goes viral. People see it. Then she goes on Jimmy Fallon. On the Jimmy Fallon show, and it goes on Deadspin and all these different places, and it's shared. Then she has her moment. That's content. And it's here and it's gone. It comes and it goes. It's a really ephemeral world now and stuff like this. Now, you could take that same, there's obviously lots of videos of people's pets that go viral, speeches, as you mentioned, Faith, that go viral and whatnot. I mean, stuff just cycles through very, very quickly. And then it disappears, then it's replaced by something else. So the content we generate has really no strong chance of going viral, but it has a chance.
So are we all, though, really going to be content providers in the sense that you describe? When you think about businesses, I'm talking about corporations in particular, big entities like Google and this one and that one, who have incredible resources, brilliant minds, programming things with search engine words in a way, have the talent and skill and resources to lead everything in terms of attention. How does the individual suddenly compete with that?
Just think all those minds, all that technology, all the billions in infrastructure, all that get us to look at a cat video. It really is kind of funny in a way to think about that. But that's the infrastructure. That's the plumbing. And they do, of course, create their own content and try to monetize it through publicity and so on and so forth.
Are they still going to be the leaders?
Yeah. I mean, there's still going to be professional content. I mean, the key is, I think that it's going to reside alongside content that we generate. Data that we generate, data that we come. And right now, you think about the review world. Right now, it's Yelp. The Yelp review matters. Your Yelp rating matters. And that's all content generated by people. And before you go to a restaurant now, people tend to check to the Yelp comments.
Yeah.
That's all generated by ordinary
folks.
But
here's an example. Yeah. People hire ordinary consumers now. To agencies hire ordinary consumers for their clients to send in good Yelp reviews.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and then and when people get bad Yelp reviews, owners have a chance to fire back.
So what? How do you figure out which one to trust? But sometimes the content is just so interesting by itself.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't work for McDonald's, but when they were running around giving out free burgers to people on the street, have a good day, good morning, here's your burger, and people would say, wow. I mean, these were real videos. Thanks. I thought, oh, that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't work for them, but I thought, that's good content.
Yeah, it's and that's a lot of, marketing. I know companies are advising their clients, to do this sort of take this sort of gimmicky approach just so they can get their name out there and get viral and whatnot with stuff. And it'll work to a point, but there's a certain amount of fatigue will set in. And then people will no longer fall for that trick, that sort of stunt, because stunts have played very well online. But as time goes on, they will become less and less effective as people become more sophisticated and more tired, say, of that sort of marketing strategy.
So this is On Ice. Rich Hanley is with me, who is my partner in crime on this show all the time. And he is terrific at this new media stuff. And so I'm picking his brain about where things are going and how it's going to work. Let's turn to radio. How's that going to go?
Radio is, of all the traditional media, radio has shown the most surprising strength across all demographics. People love audio, love sound, love talk radio, love music. But that's undergoing, a transition of its own, more so in music than talk. But because Apple's going to join the streaming fray as its iTunes system or way of delivering music ages out.
And that's in the process of aging now.
It's already aged out because folks like Pandora and Spotify, where you pay a subscription or you listen to ads to consume music that you like. So Spotify, Pandora model, artists don't like it because they don't get paid that much for their work, which is unfortunate. But Apple's now looking at that and saying, we can go in, we're going to replace iTunes with our own streaming model, which is based on Beats, which is the headphone manufacturer that also has a streaming service.
They're saying we can do it better.
They can say we can do it better because we have great design. We have great credibility with the artist community. And we have a brand that the others don't have.
And we'll pay them.
And we have enormous sums of cash. So Apple is well positioned to take advantage of this new subscription model for streaming. Talk radio, through podcasts.
Yeah, what's going to happen with talk radio?
Yeah, well, through apps. And talk radio is very popular, among all sorts of demographic layers. Obviously, there's political talk, there's food talk, sports talk, all show strength. People can't get enough of folks talking about stuff that they like or are interested in. And the on-demand universe allows them to consume that content when they're not necessarily tied to a traditional device like a car radio or something. They can download it through an app.
But do they want to hear the whole show or do they want to hear just a little piece of it? Do they want to go on Facebook and see a little piece of it or will they listen to the whole hour of something like we're doing right now?
If it's good, they'll listen to it. And if it's really good, they'll sit in their car and listen to it in the driveway, as your listeners do. I hear that stories about people listening to Faith Middleton show. They're in the driveway. Hey, you're home.
Here's
$20. I want to hear what that guest had to say. But it's true. There is something. Radio has always had this certain magical property that keeps people glued to it. I think obviously NPR, WNPR have a great lineup of folks, and it's. It's in their ears constantly, but it's going to be in their ears on their terms. They want to download it or listen to a show in the evening when they don't have time during the day. They maybe want to binge listen on the weekend.
They want they want apps.
And they want this type of story that will hold them.
So you had said something so smart to me before because I had asked you your opinion about a show that I do. In addition, it's part of this, the kind of overarching Faith Middleton show, which is The Food Schmooze. And I said to you, Rich, how do you think when you hear The Food Schmooze, how do you think about that? And you said, oh, that's different. That's an experience. The Food Schmooze is an experience. And I remember that was a word that struck me in a way. You said certain shows have an experiential feel. I hadn't thought about it because we just do it as a party of convivial, good fun, have a great time together. That's it. But this kind of altered my thinking of other shows that are a quote-unquote experience. Can you explain what you mean?
Sure. Yeah, I think because of the different mechanisms people can deploy to consume content, that shows are no longer shows in the sense that they're one way or just through one platform. They're ecosystems. You know, they're entire, you know, roots and tides and eddies and branches of content all circulating around one idea. And, you know, a food show can be experienced, you know, through images, pictures. People love to share images of food online and Instagram. They love to hear food being cooked. It's an audio experience. They love to hear people talking about it. And most of all, they want all these things happening. They want to see the food. They want to watch the video of its preparation. They want to get a sense of what it tastes like based on what reviewers or guests say. So they're not just consuming content. They're experiencing it. And then the ultimate experience is trying to make the dish at home themselves. So they get to interact at a very personal level with that sort of content that, say, in another show they can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so I think the key to successful media in the future is to make sure that it's, you know, has a 360 awareness to it, that people are going to consume it through different pieces of media at different times and in different ways. But ultimately, you know, they'll arrive at the goal of the content provider, which is to experience it, but experience it on their terms.
Will radio shows of any kind, whether it be food, sports, a show like this, whatever it might, music, will that be coming out of the car? You know, how will car users work it?
Well, yeah. A car,
will it be a dial with buttons?
Well, it'll be voice command. Voice command. It'll be, you know, Siri-like voice commands, you know, to control your audio experience in the car. I mean, already you have,
I want,
you know,
to
Spotify,
listen,
Pandora.
But will they say, I want to listen live, or will it's what's on right now? Or will they say, is this by mood? Will they say, give me the podcast of the Food Schmooze? Will they say, I want to hear On Ice? I want to hear John Dankosky? How are they going to do it?
Everyone wants to hear John Dankosky.
That's what I think.
And it's Pittsburgh Pirates. Yeah, that experience will be driven by the voice, and it will be actually manipulated, if you will, by the capacity of voice recognition software and predictive software to know what you want before you actually complete your sentence and demanding. In other words, the software is able to predict what you like to hear at a given point of day. In the morning, say, over time, you clearly like to listen to the news, WNPR. It'll automatically start with you. You don't need to say it. It'll automatically predict that.
And
that's
depending
what you want
on
to
my
to.
Mood, I can change my mind,
right?
And then, say voice command.
Yeah, and then if it knows that on Wednesday you've had a bad day at work because Wednesday is hump day, that they will play some heavy metal for you. You know, so your rage will be ventilated through the music instead of through yelling at other drivers.
Yeah.
So that's actually going to be part of the driving experience, and in the very mid future, I would say, not far future, but we won't even have to worry about driving because Google will or Apple will have the self-driving car, and we'll just go along for the ride and consume content as the algorithms drive us to and from.
The car will be our chauffeur. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And our entertainment system will read our mood based on our past moods.
Yeah.
This
is not all.
I keep saying it's a mood ring.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah,
the futurist said, "What do you eat?" You know, you're talking to only a small crowd of people there, but that's okay. Okay, so here's a thing that you pointed out, Rich, and this is circling back a little bit, but both of us read a story in the Times that the NFL is going to stream one of its games online, and it's going to do it live. And I think this is a pivotal moment. They're going to see what happens. So they're testing this out. We are all a focus group.
Right.
I happen to love sports. I'm busy, 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 so I don't watch as much as I used to, but I would watch everything. I would watch, you know, the March Madness thing, the NFL, the, you know, professional NBA stuff, golf, crazy about golf, everything Tiger does. You know, I just love the artistry of sports. So,
well, you got to get you to Quinnipiac. We got a great women's hockey team that went to the NCAA tournament. Our women's basketball team went to the NCAA tournament.
I'm well aware.
The men's hockey team is playing Friday night, 8:00 against North Dakota. You know, so you know, we have great sports. So you'd love being at Quinnipiac.
There are commercials here on ice. So amazing. The NFL is going to do an online game. And normally, think of how much money they get for doing this on broadcast channels. I don't know what they did to allow this or how much they paid to allow something like this. But it's tell us about how that is pointing in a direction.
Well, that was, to me, the second big news of the week coming out of media, the media verse. You know, the first was Facebook and the Times and other media companies getting together to think about using Facebook as a distribution platform for news within the ecosystem of Facebook. But it was the NFL. The NFL has the top television shows through traditional television in the United States by a wide margin. The top of the top 20 shows, most are NFL games. So this is the content world of the past. And the NFL is saying, well, we have to get to the content world of the future. So they're going to experiment with, I believe it's the Buffalo Bills, Jacksonville Jaguars game this fall by making it available in the local markets over the air. That's in Buffalo and Jacksonville over the air. But everywhere else, it'll be available online. And there we'll see how it goes. It's a game. I believe the game is actually being played in London. So they're going to see how it goes. And based on that, and based on those metrics, they may start transitioning more and more contests to online delivery for one big reason. The NFL and Google may partner in 2022 when the present television contracts expire. Oh. Google has already made a little conversational movements toward, you know, the NFL.
No kidding.
And thinking about bidding for NFL rights when the contracts expire in 2022.
They have the money
and the traditional networks may not.
Yes, but let me ask you, I've got to take a break, but I don't want to wait to the other side of this break. Are we going to want to, I've got a good sized television set. I love television. Are we going to want to watch something like a football game on a small screen? I mean, you know what I mean?
We watch it on a big screen. It's just delivered over the internet.
I have to say I'm embarrassed. I'm a little behind the times on this. I don't have my computer hooked up to my big screen because I just don't do that. I watch computer stuff online.
Right.
And then I watch my television over here. So there's a segment of you who have your computer wired in and you can just flip it over there. So you're saying more and more people are going to automatically have it sent straight from computer over to the big screen.
Well, the smart TV by 2022, that's 7 years, which is a lifetime in technology or an entire generation in technology. Mm-hmm. It's called TV over the top. May be more perfected, which will allow the internet to be the principal distribution system for the television programming that you want.
And they're saying that in the futurist books that I read and technology's promise that, you know, this idea of there's a computer and there's your television screen will be changed because you'll be able to do something that beams a screen on any wall or surface you have, and this brilliant image will appear in any size you want. So if it's on your desk or on the wall in front of you, there won't be computers to carry around. You'll pull out of your pocket a sheet of paper that has your typing stuff in it and your computer screen. You know, it's not going to be exactly as we think. Okay,
there's stuff coming.
All right. So, fascinating. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On Ice Fresh Edition, we're looking at technology, what it means for each of us, how this is going to go in the very near future. Rich Hanley's here. Stay with us. We have lots more to tell you. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to be up to date on what's going on in technology, digital stuff, it's happening around us so fast. We're in the middle of this revolution. It is hyperspeed, the changes. And so we've got rich technology. In fact, you need to patent that. We've got rich technology.
Johnny Football, rich technology.
And it needs one of these.
Yeah.
We've got Rich Hanley here from Quinnipiac University. He teaches this stuff and is just up to date. It's his thing. And we do this show together all the time on ICE, Ideas, Creativity, Edge. And so I thought, let me use this amazing resource right here. So during the break, Rich told me about something. Thank you also to our producers, senior producer Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. There is this software. It's called Banjo. And this is kind of mind-blowing when you think about the implications of this.
Right.
So, Rich, tell us what Banjo is.
Yeah, it's a company in San Francisco and Las Vegas that has developed this software that aggregates all social media posts, tweets, Instagram, Facebook, and whatnot, and can analyze it instantly for whether or not it's newsworthy or not.
This is before mainstream media.
Before
mainstream,
yeah, it just takes what people are chatting about and has a way to aggregate by location. So if folks are talking on Twitter, say, about tanks in the streets of Tunisia, it will know it, and it will have a visualization of that along with any Instagram photos that have been posted about that, packaged, curated automatically, and able to go to any news company that subscribes to the software. So they will know and be able and have access to images and tweets before the story is actually broken.
So who's this for? Is this aimed at news organizations or is this aimed at regular consumers or both?
Both. Right now, I mean, there's going to be a consumer app, but right now there's a professional app, and that's for news organizations. Certain television organizations have licensed the software. And it allows them to stay ahead of the news. It used to be listen to the police scanner and get your local news.
Yeah, I remember
now
that.
It's listen to Twitter, listen to watch Instagram, see what's actually – because people are all over. They're all wired with their phones monitoring this stuff.
So now we've got a curator. Banjo's a curator.
Which automatically does it, which means it senses stuff.
It would sense things like happened in Ferguson before.
Yeah.
And so nobody has to sit and say – oh, look, I'm looking on these 15 sites,
no.
And I see – because Banjo's going to say, wow, the algorithms are showing everybody's paying attention to this in this place.
In this place at this moment, and it's able to visualize that to show you in a chart
around
form.
Around the world, you're saying?
Around the world, anywhere in the world.
Wow.
It's basically put I'll use the word mesh
over
social media.
Except in remote regions where smartphones don't exist
yet. That's correct.
Okay.
But in most of the – around most of the developed world, you can pretty much monitor those conversations in a way. But they're too much for one person or one desk to make sense. But through software, software can make sense of this and alert – a human news director or something that, hey, something's cooking over here based on what we're reading from Twitter and what we're reading on seeing on Instagram. You should cover this. And it allows news companies to more efficiently cover stuff that matters. And how do we know it matters? Because people are tweeting about it.
Well, there we go. Now we're talking about judgment. This is where judgment comes in. So the news directors are going to have to make a judgment. We have seen from major news events that assumptions can be made and then the media follow. And then we find out, no. A rape as it occurred at this particular college fraternity didn't happen the way all the media said it happened because all these other tweets and messages, it didn't quite happen that way. Something happened, but we don't know exactly what at this point.
Right.
So judgment is going to be a big thing here. Just because people are tweeting from their own point of view, political persuasion, whatever it might be, this could easily be manipulated.
Well, yeah, the software is written in a way where it would be able to spot certain patterns of language.
But at the very least, it's have a look at this.
But what it is a tool. Mm-hmm. It's not the story, but it's a tool that will lead to a story and hopefully a comprehensive, fair, objective reporting. It basically serves to me in the digital age as the police scanner of yore. That is, you could you monitor what is going around. The software is monitoring what happens around the world for you. And when something ticks, you're able to look at it and examine the Instagram images, examine the tweets and so on, and make a determination whether or not to devote resources to it. So it's a great – it's a tool for a news director and TV.
You know what's amazing about what I – when I listen to you, Rich, describing all these things, what's amazing is if there's Banjo, there are going to be more to follow. People who figure out based on Banjo that news organizations and consumers want even more than that. And so somebody's going to come along and make a new app or a new service that is even improved on that, and that this exponentially is just going to keep going and going and going. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. It will go until the venture capital runs out. And there's actually talk about that right now. I'm seeing a little traffic on that.
Tell me.
Speaking of Banjo, well, you know, there's this whole technological phase in our existence is driven principally by venture capital, you know, in one place, San Francisco, where a lot of smart people are working on a lot of very interesting and intriguing products that at some point are going to have to be sold to make the money back for the venture capitalists. And this is not like the dot-com boom of the 90s, which was just absurd, ludicrous and absurd. You know, that was just
throw money at anything.
These VC are very, very, very much sophisticated people. They know what they're getting into. But at some point, the hose is going to be turned off, you know? And so the question is, where will we be when that hose gets turned off? And what will be developed? What will actually make money? What will actually, in other words, have some longevity?
Doesn't that go through cycles?
Yeah, and that's just we're right now in a very much an up cycle. Very much so. I mean, you go.
Now's the time to have an idea.
Well, now's you go out. You know, I mean, my gosh, I couldn't imagine what it's like to be in San Francisco, where everybody has an idea every minute of every living day, and people have to kind of determine whether where to put their money, yes or no. But at some point, someone's going to say no, and someone else will say no, and that's when you'll see a little leveling off of this technological enthusiasm that we're presently embracing.
Here's something that just happened. Talk about the West Coast. Let me put in a couple cheers for the East Coast. On this very show, when you and I were together, somebody called in and said, I don't understand why we cannot capture wind power in our cars as we're driving down the highway, and through some kind of technology, have this energy at these high speeds sent off to something. And a few people, other people called in and said, oh, that's impossible. And well, it turns out that between that call and this time, right this minute, I pick up the New York Times and someone is figured out how to do this. And that they're saying, you know, this is lost amazing wind power with all these people driving cars on highways. This is crazy. Yes, somebody has figured out how to do this. So three cheers for somebody on the East Coast calling this show to say, why can't we capture this?
Oh, yeah.
I guess other people are thinking the same
thing.
Sure.
Well, yeah, we got a lot of brain power here on the East Coast. We got faculty and students at Quinnipiac University, Yale, Southern, Albertus, area,
Trinity.
Eastern, Trinity, Wesleyan, MIT.
Yeah. Community colleges?
Yes, absolutely. Gateway, Manchester, and so on, you
Wesleyan.
Know, Middlesex, Wesleyan,
everything.
And Harvard, and up there at Tufts. So we have a good
MIT.
Pool of brains. Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. We're going to have we got, geez, I'm sorry we haven't opened the phone. I'm just so fascinated. 203-776-WNPR. 203-776-WNPR. If you have an idea, a question, fresh edition of On Ice with Rich Hanley, my co-conspirator. We're looking at ICE, Ideas, Creativity, Edge, and big time into technology on this show, thanks to Rich Hanley's expertise. It seems to me that everything is about curating in some way, that everybody has to be – you have to be a curator in your own life of what you load up, although some people don't think of it that way. They just think it's my life and anything that interests me, I'm sending up there. In curating, it is about judgment and a projection from you about what's important and what you think will benefit other people as it has benefited you. So when we do shows, that's what we're doing. We're saying, hey, we think this is of interest to lots of people and might benefit the world or be interesting in some particular way. How important is curing going to be?
I think that's the essential. That's the essential problem that software engineers and companies face, because there are all sorts of capacities to generate data of every kind, just our own personal health data. And as the shift to electronic health records is showing, it's very hard to do this, to find out what is meaningful, what is not. It's the old engineering problem. How do you separate signal from noise? Or in another context, the basket of remotes problem. We got a TV, we got a sound system, and we got eight remotes in a basket on our coffee table that we got to manipulate. So curating faith, to me, is the principal problem technologists face, because you have to make sense of the data, because otherwise it's just a blob of stuff.
And just like with doctors and other professions, the curating is judgment. And what you're paying for in people is their judgment, and that is everything. Matt, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show with Rich Hanley.
Hi, Rich. Hi. So I'm listening to your show here, and a lot of great...
Oh, no.
Matt, where'd you go?
Matt, technology has failed us. Oh, hey, Matt, start again. Go ahead. I understand you're listening, and what did you want to comment on?
Yeah, I just pick up on the concept of this, how do we harness wind while we're driving down the road? One of the things that I think is great is that we have all this venture capital to back ideas like this, but one of the things that we can't forget is, Newton taught us these laws of motion and physics, and the American car company and Japanese have been trying for a long, long time to reduce wind resistance in cars to increase miles per gallon. So I think with all these great ideas and this venture-backed capital, we need to be careful that we're not wasting our resources just because we think it's a good idea. So kudos to you in broadcasting all these ideas, but let's just keep the laws of physics in mind.
Okay.
He's absolutely right. You know, the best engineering is the meat and potatoes kind of engineering. You know what would be great engineering right now? What? Making a road that doesn't turn into potholes during cold and winter weather.
They seem to have that down in Germany.
Yeah.
Their highways are pristine.
We got to figure that out here.
You have to spend money to put down the right substance, and then it doesn't disintegrate. That's so simple. And yet we don't do it.
Well, okay. That's right.
I mean, really, it's saving money in the end, but it not here in Connecticut, where our studios are, because we have a deficit. So, just wanted to mention, since this is about ideas, that... there's a story in the Times that Facebook, as we were saying earlier, for some people, Facebook is the internet. They have put up a V-shaped unmanned vehicle. It has the wingspan of a Boeing 767, weighs less than a small car, and it is the centerpiece, I'm reading from the article, of Facebook's plans to connect with the 5 billion people it has yet to reach. And they are going to beam internet access down from these solar-powered drones. This seems like a stretch, says the Times, but it's going to sell ads and it's going to make money. And it is a business model at Facebook, which already has 1.4 billion users. So we're going to see. It's going to be a high-stakes competition for dominance on the internet. Amazon, as we know, is experimenting with drone delivery, but the drones are going to play big time. Andre, we only have 2 minutes left, so as quick as you can. Thanks.
Hi. I just wanted to ask Rich what he thinks about having the airplanes feed instant information rather than having to look for those boxes of recorders when we have all of these technologies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
a law.
I know.
Requiring the airplanes to do that.
Well,
that,
yes. Yeah. And as Fran Lebowitz has said jokingly, and it's not so funny right now, why don't they make the whole plane out of the material that these black boxes are made of? Go ahead, Rich.
Oh, right. That data should stream directly into some server somewhere. It's just that it's just very difficult to do. It's not a simple problem to transmit all those data points and have that data be pristine when it arrives at a server, wherever it may be.
But look, even in this crash,
they've
that thing somehow stayed intact and they've got information.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Right. I think that's going to come, though. That will happen.
Yeah.
What I was thinking about is the shuttles go into space. They don't wait for a drop box. They get instant information to Houston.
Right.
Why can't the airplanes do the same thing?
No, great point.
That's a great point.
We
it's just one shuttle and thousands of planes. It's in many ways a curation problem.
But somebody is trying
to figure this out. Absolutely.
Thank you, my friend, for calling.
Great
in.
Idea.
Rich Hanley of Quinnipiac University, thank you so much for being on the show every time. Just the best with you. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can listen to our podcast at WNPR.org. You can find the books, people, great recipes, value wine, and cocktails up there right now at foodschmooze.org in New Haven. I'm Faith Middleton.